Africa Climate Conversations, the podcast.
Hello there, welcome. I hope you're doing well. My name is Sophie Mbogwa. Now, yesterday, the 22nd of April, the world marked the Earth Day. The theme was Planet versus Plastics. This theme emphasized the need for collective action to repair and heal the planet's ecosystem, combat climate change, and preserve biodiversity. From my point of view, I believe that to repair and heal the Earth, we need to have a deeper look into our collective actions as human beings over the decades. What have we done? How did it destroy our common home? Do we want to continue the same business as usual? Humanly speaking, forests, minerals, oceans, water bodies, and other natural resources are seen as infinite by the human eye. Infinite in the sense that there are more resources to be mined or prospected for, more land to be utilized, a vast ocean and water bodies that can handle enormous levels of pollution levels, vast underground water resources that can never be drained, and billions of fish to be caught. This attitude that the Earth has an unlimited capacity and this insatiable human nature to get as much as we can out of the Earth for ourselves, regardless of the harm we are causing the ecosystem, is what I term as greed. And as the late Professor Wangari Maathai once mentioned, and I quote, "This human greed have created so many of the deep ecological wounds visible across the world today. In everything we do, there is need for a balance. That balance reminds us of that stewardshipness, that relationship placed upon us by the source of these natural resources from the beginning. We talk about sustainable development, but are we practicing sustainable use of resources to ensure that future generations have enough resources too? Just a reminder, the scientists through the IPCC are clear that humans' emissions and activities have caused around 100% of the warming observed since 1950. In today's episode, I will try and share my thoughts and observations since my childhood, having grown up in the village, practices that I saw while growing up, things I have observed while traveling around beautiful places, as well as borrow a few things I have learned about my ancestors, how they protected nature, and the norms that governed the utilization of resources. Now, I am from Kenya, a beautiful, magical country located east of Africa. I grew up in the village and I was born among the ambitious people of the Agikoyo tribe. By the way, my beautiful maiden name is Wabui, named after the second clan of the Agikoyo and Mumbi. Now, the Agikoyo people traditionally had a deep connection with nature and they believed that God, whom they referred as Gai Mwanenyaga, lived on Mount Kenya, which they referred as Kirinyaga. You see, then Kirinyaga was a snow-peaked mountain, but over time Kirinyaga has lost the snow. It's that glory that my ancestors associated with God, hence the name Kirinyaga. In East Africa, both Mount Kenya and Mount Kilimanjaro are among those high mountain areas with glaciers and permafrost. As mountain glaciers retreat, they also alter water flows downstream. Already in Kenya, there are mountain timing of water runoffs into rivers downstream Mount Kenya, such as the Tana River, are changing. This is resulting in flooding, destabilizing communities living along the Tana River Delta. The interesting thing about the Tana River, especially in Kilifi County, is the increased climate-related mental health issues, because as the flooding emanating from the upstream Tana River, that is the areas of the Mount Kenya region, has increased, and it often comes during or immediately after a drought, and these phenomena occurring consequently are not giving the community within the Kilifi County enough time to recover. In the future, these changes in water flows will have implications for hydropower and agriculture, mostly because of the silt associated with this runoff. The melting of glaciers and permafrost also releases heavy metals, especially mercury, which reduces the quality of water for freshwater organisms such as fish, as well as water that we need to use for household and farming that we depend on for survival. Let us also remember that every organism existing in an ecosystem is critical and serves a specific purpose. And when that balance is altered, it can lead to health issues. Let me just give you an example of some lizards, that is the chameleons that I grew up, you know, when I visited my grandmother's place, there were a number of them. There were so many of them, you know. Chameleons basically feeds on insects such as locusts, grasshoppers, and crickets. Now, East Africa has struggled with the invasion of desert locusts over the past few seasons. When the food chain is broken, what happens? These insects increase. Over the years, there were a huge number of predators, such as the chameleons, that called the Kenyan highlands home. However, the conversion of those highlands into farmland have been among the biggest threats to these predators, as they have no places to breed and also hide from other predators. Back to Mount Kenya. It's the second highest peak in Africa, located in the central highland of Kenya. It was a sacred place for the Agikoyo people. Basically, Agikoyo has a few mountains across the highlands that they considered important as they marked the boundary as assigned to them by God. They used specific trees to offer sacrifices to God, and trees such as the fig trees, Mogumo, was never ever cut. They had places of spiritual importance to them. During droughts or calamities, the Agikoyo had specific people responsible for offering repentance rituals to God, who would in turn heal their land. The Agikoyo used various trees for medicinal purposes, hence cutting down these trees was forbidden, and there were specific medicine men that would source this medicine from this forest. Additionally, the practices of cutting these trees adhered to specific laws, norms, and customs. But when colonialism came, my people were told that, listen, God does not dwell on this holy mountain, but God dwelled in a church. So, interestingly, they cut the trees to build God a church. Now, forest degradation among the Agikoyo started here. Today, much of the indigenous trees my forefathers relied on for medicine and spiritual purposes have been replaced by commercial exotic trees. They've lost their culture and spirituality. They've lost that deep connection they had with nature. As a result, landslides have become common and the rivers are silted with topsoils. Calamities such as floods, droughts, and windstorms, which were known as Gomashiaka, by the way, named after women spirits. Now, all these calamities are mostly looked upon from a scientific perspective, forgetting the spiritual perspective. After all, God is the source of everything, whether perceived as good or bad from a human perspective. In almost every county I have visited, save for the Northern Kenya, which is relatively dry, I've witnessed a huge acreage of farms dotted with eucalyptus trees. Research shows that most eucalyptus species use an average 785 liters of water to produce just 1 kilogram of biomass. In countries like Ethiopia, it is estimated that over 500,000 hectares of land is covered by eucalyptus plantation. In Kenya, the trees were first introduced in 1902 by the British colonial government to provide fuel wood for the Kenya-Uganda Railway. Over the years, the Kenyan government has encouraged these plantations to meet the demand for fuel wood, building construction, timber, electricity poles, which they then again turned, and the policy changed from the electricity poles to other poles that were made of cement, you know, changing policies, water conservations, charcoal production, erosion control, and also to cushion farmers when the agricultural produce fail or are low. Now, in grasslands such as the Kinangop grasslands, this was a one-time marshland where tussocky grasses and chaplong crows thrived. These eucalyptus trees were planted to reduce the high water table in this wetland and enable farming and settlement after independence. But now, the interesting thing when it comes to the Nyandarua County, the challenge that these people are facing is the lack of water. And the same people who planted eucalyptus to ensure that they could be able to farm, the waterloggedness that was not suitable for them to thrive there, the same place has become dry. Today, there has been report of the drying up of streams and rivers because of this eucalyptus, effects on the soil physical chemical properties, depletion of soil nutrients and fertility, suppression of other vegetation, reduction of forest biodiversity, and reduction of crop yield in agroforestry system. How does the replacement of indigenous trees with fast-growing exotic trees such as the eucalyptus impact the soil and human life? Now, the indigenous trees native to an area were not only important to natives for medicinal purposes and spiritual purposes, but they also helped regulate nutrients, build organic matter in the topsoil, fix nitrogen back to the soil, and create a habitat for beneficial soil microorganisms. Since the indigenous trees take long to grow and they have deep expanding root system that help combat the soil, hence reducing soil erosion, flash floods, and landslides, as well as help recharge underground water when it rains. Now, when it rains, these roots also, they help absorb a huge amount of water, then releases it back to the streams, helping recharge our rivers and springs. And this process is very important as it's what helps regulate the water cycle, maintaining a natural balance of water in the environment. Unfortunately, trees like eucalyptus grow straight towards the underground aquifers. They actually consume the water for themselves. Some of the eucalyptus, they release some toxin that kills every other shrub or plant growing next to them. Now, indigenous trees also are friendly to plant as they complement each other, offering shade to the plant without compromising on the amount of water available to the plants. As I mentioned earlier, I grew up in the village with a family of 8 children. My parents were farmers. I remember during school holidays, we would immerse ourselves on the farm. But by then, we leased a couple of land beyond what my parents owned. We also raised livestock and farmed using organic manure. I remember we would harvest over 90 bags of maize, by the way. One of the favorite things was watching these huge worms that you would dig out of the soil. The soil was porous. You could attest to the fact that the soil was alive because of the million of living organisms you could dig out from this particular soil. However, years of toxic pesticides and herbicides, as well as switching to fertilizers, have killed the soil. The soil is dry and lifeless. And as most subsistence farmers turn to commercial farming, they killed the soil, hence the dependence on more chemicals every year. However, the yields have decreased, the population has grown, and the demand for food has increased and is expected to keep increasing. Poor soils lead to poor yields. Secondly, the soil's ability to absorb water has also reduced. Now, soil porosity refers to the number of pores or open spaces between soil particles. The movement of roots, worms, and insects can form pore spaces. Now, since water is held within these pores of the soil, its holding capacity depends on capillary action and the size of the pores that exist between soil particles. The use of chemicals to kill weeds collectively kills every living organism in that soil. As a result, when the worms die, there is nothing left to turn and air the soil. As a result, with soil porosity reduced, the pores get closed. So with the increased rainfall, the topsoils is quickly washed off to the rivers, with all the chemicals again killing the microorganisms in our rivers and fish as well. My father once told me that in everything Agikoyo planted, they shared with the birds and other animals burrowing underground, such as moles and rats. After all, God gave enough for you and the animals. Both humans and animals coexisted. The belief was that if you allowed the animals to feed on their portion, God would surely ensure that your portion remained. But today, the use of chemicals kills everything, including birds, safari ants, worms, rats, and every other microorganism. All right? Now, fast forward to my generation. My generation has over-concentration of commercial farming. As a result, the farmers have killed the soil, yields have decreased, drought and floods started becoming increasingly long and persistent. Then, the government, through donor-driven projects, started introducing drought and disease-resistant seeds. Today, it has become a mandate for farmers to buy new seedlings in addition to fertilizer each season. Now, let's go back to my childhood in my village. My parents never bought new seedlings during plantation season. After the harvest, they would select the best corn, preserve it, then use it for the next season. And with rich soils, they had bumper harvest. Actually, if I remember well, we started buying maize seeds way later on. I think I had left home for high school or something. Now, let me tell you a story my father once told me about corn seed, which the Agikoyo people called bebea gedhiro, which my father grew up eating, you know, that's what they used to plant. He says it was the sweetest corn he has ever tasted in his entire life. The yields were tremendous. Now, after harvest, this maize only needed to be slowly smoked and dried. That's how they preserved it until the next planting season. They also did the same for sorghum, millet, and other seeds that they used to plant. Now, fast forward to my highly educated generation. I have personally reported on many improved seed initiatives, but at the same time, I have witnessed an increase in diseases in plants as the initiatives for drought and disease seeds have increased. Vegetables such as amaranth grew naturally throughout the year as long as there was just little water. Maize lethal necrosis hit Kenya after all these disease and drought-resistant seeds initiatives had been long here. It spread to the east of Africa and many parts of Africa. Then, the fall armyworms struck the maize plants once more. Every season, we have a new maize seed variety and the farmers should use. And the market is very specific about buying harvest from these particular seeds. Cumulatively, after a lot of effort, the traditional seeds have disappeared, but the yields remain poor. And despite all the scientific research, disease and drought keep ravaging not only the maize production, but we are also seeing it in many other foodstuff that Kenyans actually have always produced. You know, and the interesting thing is that now you're finding even other vegetables that we basically never used to buy, since the traditional ones, that only what we needed basically was when you're harvesting, then you used to actually preserve it in your own way. Now we are finding that we have to buy. There's also these prohibitive laws in terms of ensuring that you cannot give, you know, seeds to your neighbor or something, that you can just use the traditional seedlings and stuff like that. And the interesting thing is that this cumulative effort, you know, have seen that much of the traditional seeds disappear, but the yields remain poor despite all the scientific research. Disease and drought keep ravaging not only the maize production, but all this other stuff that we're actually producing. And you know what is the interesting thing is, you find that some of these vegetables that grew naturally, now they are not in many farms, especially the farms that the soils have completely died. When you find in many cases, if you use manure, immediately after rains, what used to spread was vegetables such as managu, you know, the African nightshade, the amaranth, and all these other traditional stuff just used to sprout immediately after the rains. But you'll find in some farms today, even after the rains, these vegetables are not sprouting out naturally. It's because we've actually completely killed the soil. Now, my curious brain can't help but think that this is among many systematic efforts to get agriculture to where it is today. Why? Because after years of saying no to genetically modified organism, Kenya finally allowed GMO maize seeds in Kenya last year. We do not go back in terms of looking at how we've plundered the earth, how we've actually messed up the ecosystem, but we keep on relying on our technology to get us to where it is that we think we want to get. My take is, unless the farmers find ways to heal the soil from decades of plunder, GMOs will not be a solution. Disease and drought resistant seeds have not actually helped, but they've worsened the crisis, made way for GMOs. But trust you me, until the farmers find ways to heal the soil from decades of plunder, GMO will not be a solution. However, it will benefit its protagonist and enrich a few, but not solve the food crisis in the country. The ironic thing is, all of a sudden, there is a need for organically grown food among especially the city dwellers. And these foods are super expensive. And also in other quarters, we've actually seen the push for nature-based solutions. You know, sometimes you wonder, getting us back to where we are coming from. It's a very interesting thing when you think about it. Now, when you talk about water bodies and pollution, I was raised by a very strict mother who ensured we used a traditional bag each time we went shopping. You know, my maternal grandmother used to burn every single plastic every day, literally, when she was cooking. Immediately after she emptied whatever, you know, content of a plastic bag contained, she would separate her waste into categories. So what she would do is that she would feed food remains to chicken and birds, and also the green vegetables would be fed to goats and cows. I never spotted any plastic bags on her farm. Never, not a single day. This was the same case at my mother's house. I would say these are the women responsible for my environmental consciousness. My maternal grandmother also taught me about riparian rivers. She told me that among the Agikoyo people, it was a taboo to urinate or defecate in a river, and that traditionally, nobody was allowed to farm close to a river or any water source. The Agikoyo people would preserve springs in their natural state. There were also laws and customs that governed the sharing of water bodies. For example, in a river flowing within someone's land, the unwritten law required that one take what was enough for themselves, then let the rest flow to the next neighbor. However, today, greed has resulted in the abstractions of water resources, leading to farming around springs as individuals use these waters for commercial farming. This has led to depletion of certain rivers, streams, and wetlands. At the same time, people no longer respect the riparian land. You will spot extensive commercial farming in many riparian areas today, as everyone is on the run to make that extra coin. In cities, many buildings have been built in these riparian areas, and wetlands have been converted into farmlands and estate as well. And we're seeing a lot of massive pollution in rivers, especially a very good case in hand is the Nairobi River. And the interesting thing is that you'll find during floods, these are the first areas that will actually flood. But it doesn't say that policies do not exist. Article 67 of the Kenyan Constitution says that the riparian land is public land and hence should not be allocated to anyone. However, corruption has seen much of this land either grabbed or allocated to individuals. And by also contradicting laws, you find that Kenya has various registrations that protect the riparian land. For example, the 2015 Environmental Management and Coordination Act defines riparian land as being a minimum of 6 meters and up to a maximum of 30 meters on either side of the riverbank from the highest watermark. But when you go to the Agriculture Act, it stipulates a minimum of 2 meters and a maximum of 30 meters. So when it comes to implementation, which policy supersedes the other, right? At the same time, many of the rivers in Kenya and many African countries are heavily polluted. Much of the waste ends up in these rivers, either from farms, domestic or industrial sources. In Kenya, for example, Article 98 of the revised 2021 Environmental Management and Coordination Draft requires entities to acquire a license before releasing effluents into the environment. Now, the license requires the entities to demonstrate the adoption of an efficient and functionally cleaner production technologies. However, rivers such as the Nairobi River are heavily polluted. For example, raw sewerage is released into the river from the upstream side, and many companies do not comply with the policy. Where policies exist, they might be in contradiction with another policy, making implementation difficult and leaving loopholes for corruption. Someone might think that my forefathers used primitive methods to preserve food, coexist with nature, share resources, and many other areas. But I find that my ancestors had wisdom that our generation lacks. Instead, we seem to have acquired a lot of knowledge from books and our education. But this generation surely lacks the specific wisdom of the forefathers. Why? We have abdicated our spiritual aspect of being. We rely so much on technology and knowledge, but we forget that to deal with these disasters and help, be it climate change related disasters, it comes only from God, who is our source and the source of every other living organism. We have become too greedy. Every man for himself and God for us all. Everyone wants to acquire as much as they can as fast as possible. But forgetting that the effort we make to destroy this universe comes back to us tenfold, as we can witness the intense forest fires, cyclones, droughts, hurricanes, and health-related issues we face today. Can we restore balance? I believe yes, we can. But calls for that spiritual consciousness to balance between economic and non-economic values of nature. These spiritual values need to be part of our conversations from policymakers, politicians, farmers, leaders, scientists, our children, and everybody, so that we can start appreciating the earth and its resources in that relationship of give and take. Now, that's all I had for you today. Next, I will try and dive into energy, critical minerals for green revolution, mineral exploitations in Africa, and international climate policies. If you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, Africa Climate Conversations, please remember to do so, as well as please share this podcast with a friend and help us reach more. As usual, I appreciate you for coming back. Now, from the rainy green city in the sun, Nairobi, waheri for now. My name is Wabu Wabogwa.
Africa Climate Conversations. The podcast.